heard my name in the music somehow. I don't know where the hell that came from. That's Merv Griffin, the Screaming Mimis from Planet X. Adam Gorightly is here. We got to do the show intro just to make it official. Oh, there's my bass in there. Make me sound better. There we go.
Show me how you do all the effects there on the
oh, okay.
Thing.
Okay, let's fade to that side.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Yeah, that's a fun program, and I'm getting a lot of cheap mileage out of it. Although, as far as apps go, it's actually it's on the expensive side. You know, they all hang around like 99 cents to $2 or $3, $20 app.
Good Lord!
Yeah, it's amazing. It's Radio Mysterioso. Adam Gorightly is here, fresh from his appearance at the Conspirazine presentation yesterday in San Diego, which I drove down to immediately afterward. He was a guest on Church of Mavis. At least I think you were probably a guest for about 5 minutes on the Church of Mavis radio show.
Yeah.
do you want that mic stand so you don't have to lean?
This is good.
You all right?
Yeah.
Your back's going to start to hurt.
Okay.
Yeah, I know this because it's happened to me. Oh, I forgot to repeat and repeat and repeat all these. I didn't get it. this is like the syncopated clock, except for it's wait till Adam gets his microphone.
I'm good to go.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
You can adjust it so that you can actually probably just sit back in the chair and relax and leave the mic just sitting there. You're doing this tour to promote. I said, did you see the write up I put on Radio Mysterioso? I guess you probably
no,
because I did it like 3 hours ago.
Yeah, nope.
I said Adam Gorightly is on a 2-city mega tour to promote his new book, Happy Trails to High Weirdness.
Yeah,
which I described as an autobiography of sorts.
Of sorts, yeah, a travelogue of high weirdness. Is that not? Description of
there
the book.
There we go. Yeah.
Better? Yeah, it's a travelogue of high weirdness. Got an idea to put this together a few months ago because I had these articles I wrote for Paranoia and UFO Magazine of different UFO conventions and things of that nature. Then the publisher I was working with, he started compiling. I kept sending him different things dealing with all my travels through California and the Great Southwest and biographical pieces I think it came out pretty well. It's kind
I should have told you to bring one of them. I bring the copy and to read out of.
I don't have the copy. They're not.
What were you reading out of last night?
I put together some excerpts from the book last night.
Because, I might have it because I think you sent me one.
I did.
Yes.
How is that possible?
Oh, no, this is the other thing. It's the thing that we're working on.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
So it's coming out very soon. I had hoped that the plan was to have at least one copy with me last night, but didn't have that. No big deal. I'm just trying to start a little buzz about it, you know?
Right.
Get the word out.
What's a standout piece in there that people... Well, something that stands out to you that people might not have heard of that you'd written. Or a favorite. You know, because I've known him for many, many years, and he's been writing about everything. Everything that I'm interested in and beyond.
Mm-hmm. They're all my babies. I like the... I wrote pieces on the retro UFO conferences and Conspiracy Con, and all those were kind of just... they turned into adventures, you know. I kind of approached it like a Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gonzo journalism with...
Nick wanted to do that, I think, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was was looking at...
In the same vein as Three Men Seeking Monsters, yeah. Except for this country and the stuff he'd done since then.
But I think that he was presented that to some publishers, and it turned into his contact e-book. He couldn't get enough interest in it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I like those pieces. There's, you know, the Conspiracy Con stuff. It was like some of the people I met at those conferences gone on and did work with, you know, that related to the whole Tuesday Weld research I got into. And I first met Andy Colvin at Conspiracy Con 9, and we had some very interesting experiences with a lot of synchronicities and doppelgangers and sorted weird things that go bump in the night.
Yeah,
there's my Greg's bringing up the
Writing Mysterioso site,
and it has a great illustration of me by Dennis Reno. You know how to say his name?
I say Reno.
Reno sounds.
In fact, right. He sent an email to me and said, like Drano, except without the D.
Okay,
so that's why
there you go. And in that kind of UFO scene, my mustache has taken on a life of its own.
It's taken over. It's like it's as long as you are tall. It looks like you should be in the Ripley's Museum.
If you notice the little alien gray guy there, he has a mustache too.
Do you have that piece in there about the Bigfoot press conference?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's I like, you know, all the pieces that ended up in there. Some are, you know, that was another kind of gonzo travel piece. I just got a wild hair to go out there. I heard about, you know, a couple days they're having a Bigfoot press conference.
Where did they do that?
It was in...
Mountain View or
San Jose, Palo Alto.
All right.
And that was a wild, very humorous, hard to believe happening where it was that Thomas Biscardi character who has a history of being involved.
Some espresso and Biscardi.
Yeah. It wasn't his first hoax, and it probably won't be his last, and they should have... driven a stake through his heart because he's back on the scene again. He's blaming all the hoaxing and
on the conspiracy or
on the two good old boys from wherever the hell they were from that he was taken in by those guys, and I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. So, but this time he's not getting taken in, whatever it might be.
He's like a long time. He has a history in Vegas as a producer, so he's a long time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Extra. Are you out there listening, Tom? So I showed up at that conference, and I'm with a bunch of, I got a press pass from somewhere in St. Louis, a radio station, and I forget how that, I was looking for a press pass. I guess I was doing the reporting for them. So anyway, got this press pass and like I'm a real journalist or something. And I go in there, and there's a bunch of real journalists in there. It was a huge turnout. If you see the photos from that, CNN and all these national news was there. And I get into the place, and I'm walking around with these other quote-unquote serious researchers, and we're trying to figure out where the conference room is, and we ended up going outside where Biscardi was holding court before the actual conference, and I saw him, somebody is having a little mini interview, and somebody in the press tried to ask him a question, and Biscardi dressed him down like he was some prima donna, you know. We wandered in there, and oh my God.
How dare you ask me any questions before you're supposed to be asking questions?
What a fiasco. We were all hoping the body was in there so we could see it.
Yeah.
He said, "This is the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. I've touched it, prodded it, smelled it. It's the real deal, folks." Then he brought in his the good old boys from Alabama or wherever the hell they were from. And
right.
Yeah, they were... It was a whole line of crap. I wasn't totally convinced at that time, but afterwards, as I was driving home, trying to put it together in my mind, they came forth with some quote-unquote DNA evidence.
Yeah.
And the DNA tested as, one of the samples tested as possum. And their explanation for that was that the Bigfoot had eaten a possum and it came out somehow in their DNA analysis of it, which was inconclusive. And so if you followed the story, when they finally somebody examined the body, those guys just took a Bigfoot suit and stick a bunch of intestines
guts and stuff from the butcher in there, yeah, or maybe from hunting that they
and
did.
Biscardi later he backtracked, said it was some of his associates had gone out and looked at the quote-unquote Bigfoot and touched it and smelt it. And so.
But didn't you say in the press conference he said he had done it and was the most amazing thing he'd ever seen?
Yep.
Now he's saying he didn't and his associates went out
his
and did
associates
it.
Did. He was misled.
Oh, so it wasn't him, as he said before. He meant his associates, not him himself.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know what they expected to get away with this, maybe just to cash out on it real quick. I know Biscardi got some research money, you know, $10,000, $20,000 from some schmuck who paying for them to do more.
After this?
When this all was going on.
Oh, okay. Because then I went to the one this last year, and it was...
Oh, well, that was a different story.
Yeah, that wasn't nearly as funny. I mean, some of this press people were trying to make a joke out of, but it was just... It wasn't ridiculous at all. I mean, the idea of it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they weren't making a huge claim. They were making a maybe claim.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do the analysis. I don't know if they ever got it done. And if they did, I bet it was inconclusive.
No, and I had planned to go to
this
that.
Was the Bigfoot's handprint and face print on the truck.
In Fresno, California, with Jeffrey Gonzalez and his homies.
Yeah,
I had planned to go to that, and something came up, and you and Skyler went in my place.
Yeah.
And, pretty...
it was interesting.
It is interesting, and those imprints are...
Whatever, I don't know. Yeah. No, I guess it wasn't a bear. No, it wasn't any kind of animal. But, you know, it's inconclusive. When I saw him there, it was a month since it happened, and he hadn't washed the truck still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a part of the truck where there were other prints and things, and he'd taken the window off the truck. But there was still something on the door, and he was pointing it out to me. And, I mean, it just looked like a dog had drooled on there or something. I don't know what it was. I'm not saying it was, but... he was pretty excited about it, but
who knows?
They did show some videos for us. Said, "Look, there's a Bigfoot standing there. It's like there is a black thing standing there moving slightly."
I've seen those are photos from a previous occasion.
Yeah, they were previous. It wasn't the same. He made it clear that these are stuff that's been shot in the same area.
Yeah, those photos didn't impress me at all. I think I got on their. Might have posted that on our Lo-Fi site.
They had some video, too, but there was no, like, incredible walking thing in the distance,
no,
like some of the others we've seen, which are, you know, they have across a canyon, you see something big, hairy, humanoid thing walking, but, you know, what are you going to do with it?
He seems totally sincere from when I've heard him.
I don't think he's trying to fool anybody. I don't think he thinks he is either.
And I think the intent of that press conference was to try to get other people interested, maybe bring in some funding to do the more DNA. Now, see, he didn't want any of the money himself.
Yeah,
he just wanted to get it.
A couple websites, I remember. I actually went back and looked at the transcript. They said, oh, here it is. They're trying to make money.
Yeah.
But the question, you know, what they were saying, and I was there, was we want money from somebody to do further research. Now, we want you to give the money to the people that do the testing,
mm-hmm.
not to us.
Yeah.
And so they were actually bypassing themselves as recipients. It's like, when we find a lab that's willing to do it, we'd like somebody to, or a group of people or somebody to come in and pay for it. I don't know if they ever did. I actually ought to call him up and find out.
Oh, I haven't heard. I kind of follow him. He's based out of
Fresno, so he's right near you, sort of near you.
Singer Paranormal Society, which is just outside of Fresno. And the last I heard, he took that glass window from... It's an SUV, I guess, and has
it was a truck. It's like a Ford
truck.
Or a Chevy.
That's
truck.
Right. Yeah, they have it hidden somewhere under safekeeping at a secret location. So
yes.
They get the money. He's a pretty interesting dude. I've really never hooked up with him. I know you and Skyler talked to him a bit. They've come across some quote unquote ruins or something in the hills outside of Fresno and. I'd like to go check those out sometime, and also the Bigfoot site. They make the Bigfoot site sound like it's way in the remote wilderness or something, but it's basically looks like it's just a few miles into the forest.
Oh, you kind of know where it is?
I can tell by the elevation that it's not way up deep in the forest.
Oh, by the pictures and what's growing there and all that.
Yeah.
He said it takes like 45 minutes to get there.
Yeah, that's not.
You don't think
on
so?
A mountain road, that ain't.
Yeah, that's not
going very far.
Right, right.
Yeah. Who the hell knows?
Do you? I found talking to Rob. What's it? Patton.
Ron Patton.
Ron Patton last night. That I think at first he was a little put off because I kept poo-pooing just about everything. Finally, I just said, you know, you hear all this stuff so long and nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes of it, even if you look into it yourself and you start to get very cynical, even though you're still interested.
Mm-hmm.
Do you kind of feel like that about the paranormal or about UFOs in particular? Are you kind of tired of not getting any answer and hearing people that say they have it and then having to... Listen to them for at least 5 minutes till you figure out that they haven't figured anything out.
I get tired of people coming up, say they found an answer or something. You know, well, we've heard this all before. That there isn't an answer, that doesn't bother me at all. It's, you know, it's a mysterious world we live in. I revel in the mysteries and the strangeness. Why do we need...
Yeah,
need an answer for
it? Yeah. Is that why you keep being interested? Your interest stays and you keep writing about it. It's just kind of like...
It's like, do we really need to know the answer about UFOs? Can our hearts stand the shocking facts
time stealers from outer space? Time robbers from outer space? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll never find out, so it's... Interesting.
You don't think so?
Hell no.
I don't either. No, I don't either. Why not?
Or maybe we will this year. It's 2012 after all.
Yeah.
Like we've talked before, I think it's all... We're part of this whole thing going on, and it's been a perpetual mystery for ages. People have been having the same experiences.
Yeah, and we tend, for some reason, we think that, well, now, of course, we're very close to an answer on this because we're so sophisticated,
right.
But, yeah, like you've mentioned and other people have mentioned, it's, whatever the thing is, it's so intimately connected with us that either it's us fooling ourselves into some mystery, I think, or there is an external cause for it, which I think there is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always going to be outside of our grasp, no matter what we think.
Yeah, and some of it I just find entertaining. I heard Chris O'Brien talking about those little leprechaun guys with the Keystone cop hats.
Yeah.
Episodes like that. I mean, those are the little green men of legend, you know?
Yeah.
They've been around forever.
Mescalito, et cetera. Oh, the other thing. Wait, you know what? Let's. Speaking of funny things, Ted Torbich says, "How can you move in the room with that mustache? Oh, move that mustache in the room with you."
Ar.
Yeah.
See, this thing's taken on a life of its own. I never really noticed it. Then photos started getting photos on Facebook and these other places, and I became known as the stash. You know, like.
You got that Mike Piazza thing almost. Yeah.
I used to have more of a Fu Manchu.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
going
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
More
I remember that one.
Cowboy look.
Well, I always say that Adam sounds like a cowboy. Sounds like a cowboy. You sitting around. I'll tell you the one time we had Bigfoot run through our camp.
This old cowboy's been around.
Somebody on my Tim Cridland, our friend Tim, the torture king.
Yeah, what's he got going on?
He sent along a clip of a
That's that Venusian thing?
Yeah, the speaking Venusian. He also speaks Plutonian, and then he claims he doesn't know how people speak. He doesn't know the Martian language, so he can't give him it. And there's a video. He says, "Can you write this?" He goes, "Yeah, but the thing is, the quality of the video is so bad, I can't see what he's writing."
Can we listen to a clip?
Yeah, let's hear this clip of...
Ladies and gentlemen, live from
Radio Mysterioso.
Venus or Pluto.
Whoa. What does that mean, Anthony?
That means, how are all you? I am very pleased to see you this afternoon.
How many languages can you speak?
I can speak altogether three of the space languages. One is Venusian, the second is Kruger, the planet Kruger 60b, yes. And Pluto.
What about Plutonian? What does that sound like?
Plutonian is
How did you learn these languages?
These languages have been a gift sent from me from the actual people by rays. And even at this moment, although you cannot see them, they are sending these rays down to help me.
By some mental process, or some mechanical process?
No, it's by some mechanical process. But apart from this, I can't tell you how it's done.
What about Martian?
Martian, I don't know much about. Although I've heard so much about them, I've never been in contact with them.
It cuts out for some reason.
You haven't actually been to any other planets yourself?
No, not yet.
Who drew that picture? Did you?
No, a lady done this for me. The name of Mrs. Giel.
And where did these people actually come from?
They come from the second planet from the sun, Kruger, 60b.
So in addition to speaking these languages, I believe you can also write them. This is correct.
Yes, I can write these languages.
Could we see an example of their writing, do you think?
Yes, certainly.
And you can't see it because of... Yeah, it sounds like an auction.
What does that mean, actually?
This here means that we are here for a purpose, which is something to do
with
your Earth.
Earth.
That we will reveal later.
Of course, it's always later.
Could we see some Plutonian writing, do you think?
Certainly.
You going to speak it while you're writing it? Oh, there's a little bit of it. There goes. People on Pluto must be laughing at his accent.
What does that mean, actually?
This means... Now, they have written this here, a message to you. Before long, in 1969, we are going to show you proof, Patrick, they call you. Did you mind us here?
Not at all,
Patrick.
Far from it now.
We have We have watched you for a long time. We are interested in all your great men besides ordinary people. We are interested in everyone.
That's most encouraging, because Venus...
Mr. Bernard Byron from Essex moves in a realm of the unknown, which, I think you'll agree, makes it very difficult for us to disprove him. And yet he has the charm, the cheerfulness, and the courage which is common to all independent thinkers, and for which I myself have the warmest admiration.
Me too.
Right on. Am I still coming across?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, play... sent you that clip from The New Prophet, the trailer. Do you have that? I think it's on your...
Yeah, it's on, scroll down. It's on my... this is a movie... Did Sam write it?
I believe so, yeah.
Written, directed by our buddy from Australia, Sam Fielder, who was the one that came out here to work on a documentary that Adam here was producing. Basically about the early zine scene in the 90s and the people involved with it, specifically in California, I believe. How long ago did you say? It was a little while ago. I did watch it. And Adam here did the music for the feature.
Some of the music.
Some of it?
Myself
Oh, okay.
And some other. I probably did 80% of it.
Oh, here it is.
And this is a clip from The New Prophet, the trailer. Of course, you can't see it, but you can...
Uh-oh, my wind blowing on microphone. Oh, God, it's buffering. Oh, no.
Let it do its buffer thing.
There's a guy listening to the ground.
Oh. Spaceships.
Maybe we should convert to Christianity or something.
I've been seeing... demons around the whole place, just so you should know. I thought you should know that.
Have you been taken too?
And when I looked at the aliens, I felt like I wanted to cry, but I don't know why. And they told me that the Earth was at a really unstable point, and that we really need to start taking care of it.
Here is not the place for answers. Here is a strange place where nothing makes sense.
And I saw all these holographic images of the Earth changing and destruction, like floods and earthquakes and volcanoes. Do you want to fuck me?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've been hearing some weird shit around here lately, like really weird noises and strange screams coming from under the ground. Really far out weird shit.
That's Mel's hole.
Be careful, yeah?
Okay.
Uh-oh, no, not sheep.
I promise I'll come back and haunt you.
In a good way?
Yeah, in a good way, not a bad way.
Jeez. Every time she pops a bubble, it does that?
What's done is done, Seth. Over and out.
Is this your music?
Real.
Mm-hmm.
The way that life is, you know, that the way we live is like a disease for the planet, for the Earth.
The zone you occupy has many things under the ground. There's a system of tunnels and underground bases. They are filled with aliens and people and time travelers. I'm trying to speak in a way you understand. Are you understanding? Seth is the prophet. Make sure to keep things open for him and let him speak with an open heart.
This is why I don't want to be with you, Seth.
Because you're a fucking crazy new prophet.
That's the new prophet from Samuel Fielder. He's
just finished it and figuring out where to go next.
Oh, there we go.
Distribution and probably start entering some film festivals. He's an indie producer, director, so you know how that... But I think it's... I gave Greg a copy tonight to check out. So I think it came out pretty well, which bodes well for the documentary that Sam's working on.
Are you doing the music for that too?
I will do some. Actually, we're going to, if you remember a song we did at
Retro
UFO, me and Joe, called UFO Lane.
Probably. I heard it again.
I played the theremin on it. And, we're going to redo that song we got talking about, doing a good version, because Sam filmed us there at the levee where we had the old psychedelic UFO encounter. And,
okay. Which I apparently drove over on when I went to the Bigfoot conference.
You were near You were nearby it, probably a couple miles, though, that I think
the,
about
the
it.
The famous levee of the psychedelic UFO experience that's in your writings.
What's cool, though, we Joe and I are going to get together, but we have another friend we hadn't talked to in a few years who had his own missing time experience. He's a bass player. He's going to play bass on it, and another lady friend of ours we hadn't seen for years, she's also had experiences. She's going to sing some background vocals, so it's all like, all of us are some type of experiencers are going to work on this song for the film, which I think is pretty cool. Put those energies together and
for
see
the
what
documentary
happens.
You mean
yeah
is there a name for the documentary yet?
Parafornia.
Greg's, you didn't have that name when we were working on it.
Sam came up with that. We were kicking around different stuff, and he came up with kicking around different things, and he said Parafornia. I go, that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, it's a good what's that word when you make up a word? Portmanteau, is that the name of the word? Neologism.
Yeah, that's it.
Sigrid says yes. It's a very good neologism. I learned that word by listening to EVP recordings. And the guys, Raymond Cass, who was an EVP researcher in England in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah, going way back. He was the first one that came out with that stuff.
He was like one of the first, I guess, amateurs or whatever you want to call it. Everybody's an amateur, but he would record them off of like radio broadcasts and shortwave and all that.
Do you follow what's going on with EVP research? You get
not really, because every time I hear it, somebody's telling you what they're going to say first, and they never just let you listen to it.
That was like the what do they call the backwards messages they find and.
Well, some of them are very clear, but most of the time people saying, "Well, here's where he says get out," and. They're keeping me here in hell and I can't stand. And what do you think you're going to hear when the thing is played?
Of course, yeah.
You can't front load people with that. Some of them that Chris has played me some of his and he didn't front load me, Chris O'Brien, and it sounded. He said, "What do you think it said?" And I'd tell him, he'd say, "Yeah, that's basically what we thought it was saying," which is how I thought that's how EVP should be presented.
Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't followed up on any of it. Why?
Oh, there's a lot on the radios. I tune in to whatever, Coast to Coast sometime or Rents. And, it's the same stuff they tell you ahead of time. Listen closely. It's going to, if you
don't. Here's where the little girl says, "Stop it, Daddy," or something.
Yeah, if you don't, they don't tell you ahead of time. It's like,
But I said,
and who knows?
To be fair, I have heard a few which are kind of unequivocal, if real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting if true, says Nick Pope. As Nick Pope says, were you about to request something? We have your CD queued up here. One of your
I think.
What's Comparison of Fallout Shelters? Is that actual ad?
Yeah, I plugged that in there just because it fit. That's the only thing that's not my music. It's from the Mort Crydell Advertising Agency.
Is that the one with the giant explosion at the beginning?
Uh huh.
The one that's like, nuclear war could happen tomorrow, that one.
Why don't we, the song before that, can you start that about 30 seconds towards the end of that, then go into the... Then see how that flows into the next song. A lot of these songs, it's called Songs for Another World, and they're kind of doom-laden... bummer songs about where we're heading.
Is that your music publishing, Illuminati?
That's me, yeah.
Yeah. Was that your term you came up with? Because remember we used to, at the Texifornia Cookouts, that was what the name of the group was.
I think so, I think. But other people have used it since then. You know how I think I was the first one I saw use
too.
That Illuminati as in N-A-U-G-H-T. There's now a group at Burning Man that's the Illuminati something, and I don't know if they stole it from me or came up with it on their own.
Yeah, you never know.
Somebody is bound to figure it out.
I don't know how I can go faster on this thing.
You know, maybe 30 seconds left in that song.
This is a brand new, wonderful DJ CD player we have here, where you can scan through things, but I'm not exact. God, that's going to take me forever. Huh. Oh, I know what I could do. It's 30. Duh. Go to the next one and back up 30 seconds. How about that?
There you go. That's the ticket.
What's the name of this one?
You'll have
After the Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another uplifting tune.
And I got to make sure that I'm fading. Oh, I see. It's CD1 here. Anyway, this is...
You remember I heard you play that one night. I said, I need that immediately. And I took this cut and put it into the album. Hopefully Morris Kreidel, advertising agency, doesn't care.
International struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris. Plus, a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
Laughing in the sun. We were
there's a couple of selections from Songs for Another World.
Let's
almost sounds like a Contactee album. Well, there's Songs from Another Planet, which is Howard Menger's record.
These are Songs for Another World. The Earth is coming to an end, so these songs... Play one tune, though. It's kind of like... remember that album?
If you didn't realize, these are by our guest, Adam Gorightly.
Yeah,
this is his music.
Remember, you ever heard the album Metal Machine Music?
Yes,
by
Lou Reed.
Reed.
I have it.
This is my take on it, and it's... Put my glasses on here, and this is getting terrible. This.
How many tracks after the one that's playing now?
It's actually the next one. It's called Fields of Pain. Another uplifting little tune.
This one?
Yeah.
Ah, you're right. Lou Reed thing. It's more tuneful, though.
Yeah. It's a little teaser of my album here.
One thing you... God, this... Is that working? One thing you mentioned... One thing you read yesterday, which I thought everybody enjoyed probably more than all the others.
Wilson thing,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, you got a nice reaction out of that. I reacted to it. I mean, it made me remember Bob and it made, you know...
Yeah, that's in Happy Trails to High Weirdness.
Yeah.
A conspiracy theorist tour guide. Available soon from
fijipress.com.
Yeah, quite an influence on both of us. And,
yeah.
Both had a chance to, I guess you had met him before that, but we...
I'd met him. I interviewed him once and then I think talked to him one time after that.
Yeah.
But you actually got involved with sort of... on a different level and talked to him quite a bit more and enrolled for one of those classes he had toward the end of his life. And
not a lot more, but, you know, a couple occasions after that. But he was, you know, always cool about calling him on the phone. It was no big deal.
No imposition on him.
No, he got pissed off at me one time.
He got pissed off at you?
Well, he was cranky. The reason why, I called and let it ring two or three times, and I was kind of, oh, okay, hung up. Tried again a little later, and he said, was that you calling before? God damn it, let it ring. You know it's hard for me getting around. Because he was, you know.
Because he got up, and it's a pain in the ass for him to even get up.
I felt bad about that. I have, and I've been slowly editing this, a telephone conversation with him, and it's probably just 10 minutes long, and it's part of the stuff I shared in that piece I read last night where we had the conversation about the John Poindexter and the Office of Information Awareness, and it also on the tape is where he pointed me as a high priest in the Bavarian Illuminati. I told that story last night. There was rumors going around, you know, by conspiracy buffs that because of whatever reasons, writing the Illuminatus, and that he was actually in the Bavarian Illuminati and was some kind of head. And I asked him, Bob, are you the head? And he said, no, I'm the toe, which kind of set me back for a minute, but it didn't deter me. So I asked him, well, if that's the case, can you appoint me as a member of the Bavarian Illuminati? And he did, so there you go.
Yeah, you see, you're lucky. I never knew him well enough to have him appoint me as anything, but I was lucky enough. The longest time I ever got to really talk to him, and that was only because you said you want to come with me when you went and interviewed him for the Thornley book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I got to talk to him not a lot, but a bit more than I had before. And the other thing that made me happy is he remembered who the hell I was.
Mm-hmm. He had a talking to people who knew him, like my friend Louise Lacey. She was commenting. I saw her. She was a Discordian.
Yeah.
Back in the day, pretty brilliant lady. I saw her about a week ago. Wife and I were down in the Bay Area. She has this house in the Berkeley Hills that looks over the bay. It's just freaking awesome. But we were talking about Wilson. She noted that he had this photographic memory. He could remember everything.
Well, maybe I wasn't that special. About 3 years before he died, 4 years, 3 or 4, I knew his birthday was coming up, and I sent him a Office of Information Awareness T-shirt.
Which probably appreciated that.
Yeah, I think I even saw a picture of him wearing it. Oh no! I wrote him the next year. I said, you know, Bob, how are you doing? Happy birthday. He says, I'm wearing that shirt that you gave me last year.
I gave him a copy of The Shadow Over Santa Susana, some kind of inscription in it, and it ended up on, eBay or bookfinder.com.
Oh, really?
Selling for like $1,000 because it was...
it was signed and it was Wilson's.
Yeah.
I've got one weird thing like that. I've got Son of the Sun signed to Dan Fry from... Oh, yeah, Dan Fry from Orfeo Angelucci. Really weird little piece. And he wrote the intro to the Thornley book, too.
Yeah, Wilson, right. Wilson. I read some of that. That's a...
Yeah. That was a really... That was every time he... You know, all of his writing is just... You know, I always want to read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of sorry I didn't get him to sign that book and have you sign it too, because I, Sex and Rockets, I got signed by John Carter, our friend, Evil Paul from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and Wilson, who did the intro to that.
I didn't really have him sign that much. I didn't want to impose upon. I asked him when we were there, and hey, you mind signing the book? Okay, that's the couple. Let's not get crazy, but he signed a copy of. The hell, maybe it's Quantum Psychology.
I don't think I brought anything for him to sign that time because I felt like I was kind of embarrassed to ask. But yeah, I got a couple things signed by him, including New Inquisition, which was the first one I read, which affected me deeply because I was at an imprint vulnerability point right then.
Yeah. Talking, but I don't want to get too much into it. But
one of the listeners actually requested that we have a roundtable just talking about Wilson at some point, which of course you should either run or be heavily involved with on this show. But go ahead.
Ken Thomas would be another good one.
I like that idea.
Oh, so the don't need to get too deeply in this, but the Discordian, well, I don't want to get too deep into it, but Discordian archives that belong to Greg Hill, the founder of Discordianism, has been passed on to me, and there's a lot of wonderful stuff in there, but you talk about signed books, and Bob Newport, one of the founders of Discordianism, passed this stuff on because he basically rescued it from a dumpster when...
What?
Greg Hill died, yeah. It was getting ready to get tossed out.
Six
boxes of stuff that's going to lead to several book projects. But as I was going through this stuff with Bob Newport, he'd pull out something here or there, and I saw sitting down was the first edition of Cosmic Trigger, and I opened it up, and it had it was to Greg Hill.
Yeah.
I go, ooh, I kind of put it back in and tried to hide it a little. And somehow Newport's a magical fellow. That's the one thing. Somehow he tuned into, oh, I better keep this. I would have loved to have, but he was great for turning me on to all that stuff. One of the things I found in there, if you look in my book, The Prankster and the Conspiracy, a book about Kerry Thornley, there is... Camden Benares was one of the Discordian guys, and I found a rare picture of him. He used to dress in like a Catholic cleric's outfit, and when he'd go to Halloween, him and his wife would. One thing they did, she'd dress up like a nun, and they'd go into Denny's and start making out just to fuck with people. But he had this necklace. Benares, he was known as the Count of Fives, and he had this necklace with a big five on it. You'll see that in the book. When I was going through these archives, I came across different buttons and stuff, pulled out a necklace with the five on it. Go, holy shit, that's Camden.
That's the one from the...
Yeah, and so I started communicating with a friend of his, John F. Carr. He's a science fiction writer. He was Camden's writing partner, and he's his executor, and he's bringing out a Camden's last book, which I wrote the intro for.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, they were real close friends, so I sent him that... what do you call that? The number
necklace.
Five medallion necklace, yeah. I thought it was... What was I going to do with the thing? I certainly not going to put this stuff on eBay and start...
Right.
You know, that's not my intent. It's to bring out this material.
Right.
It's some cool stuff, so stay tuned, folks.
Just reams of information. Anything, a teaser for anything?
Okay. Don't question me too much, but...
I won't. I'm just asking you for one.
Maybe,
one teaser.
Maybe an unpublished Robert Anton Wilson manuscript.
Maybe.
Maybe. I might write the intro and afterword for...
I wasn't pressing to mention that, but yes, thank you.
I think the publisher is okay with it now because things have been signed, but...
But you never know.
It's gonna happen. I'm just kind of like you about talking with about projects.
It
kind of sucks the... You don't want to suck the energy out of something.
Yeah. Yeah, it has nothing to do with ego or anything like that. It has everything to do with... To me, it has everything to do with having my energy to even do something.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot to get me working, and then Adam here gave me great advice. He said, if you're going to write, just write something every day. Very, you know, it's totally... what's the word? Basic advice that nobody ever really thinks of. I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll lose your momentum, which I have again. Start writing every... Which you sent me this stuff, and it's nice because it kicks my butt.
Yeah.
I need an occasional ass kicking, at least for the writing. I don't know about anything else.
For me, it's even... this is like advice for budding writers, whatever. Just if you're working on something, at least just go in there once a day and open up the document, do a spell check.
Yeah.
Do something to...
keep talking to it.
Yeah, yeah. Keep nurturing your baby.
Yeah. Or it'll just fade away. And then you'll wonder what the hell happened 10 years ago with that thing that you were working on.
Mm-hmm. And I've had stuff like that in the past. When I was younger, I tried to write short stories, and I'd whip out a page of something that seemed like it was really great, and it was like... I had no idea where to take it from there.
There's the excluded middle siren. I'm sorry, the Rudy Mysterioso siren. It's not an official show till you hear that. Do you want to hear any funny music? Do you want to talk about other stuff? Do any of the listeners want? I said that we might take calls.
Oh, I told them on my page that we encourage verbal abuse or something like that.
Oh, okay.
If they want to call in.
213-252-0998. If you want to call in and engage them some verbal abuse. On the page, I said we will take calls if we feel like it, because I usually don't feel like it. But the thing is that Adam's been on the show so many times, and he's done so many things to screw with me while I'm on the air that I think we should encourage people to call up. And oh, did you hear Mr. Fab on the other day with that guy that called up and said he was like a master phone prankster? He called up in a what was it? Some sort of what's the word? Community center sports office or something like that, and said something like, "So you guys are gonna what was the word? You guys mean business down there or something like that?" He's like. Yeah, I guess we do. I'm going to come down there and do some wading in your pool. Okay, sure.
This was on your show. No,
yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah. No, it's when Mr. Fab was on. Yeah. I want to hear more of that guy's stuff. It sounds like something that's right up your alley, too. The guy wasn't, he wasn't swearing at them. He wasn't making them mad. He was just kind of throwing them off the rails ever so subtly. Now, they didn't know exactly, you know, because people don't want to be rude, especially if you're not being rude, so they don't exactly know what to say.
Yeah.
I wish I had the straight-off recording of it. I do have it in the recording of the show. I found a site that's called Atomic Toys, and they have all these images of toys based on having to do with nuclear, atomic energy, nuclear and atomic, same thing.
You know what song I was thinking about?
Put out in the 50s and 60s. What?
The other day I haven't heard for a while is the Humbards.
The Hiding Place song?
I've got a Hiding Place.
You like that one, Steve?
She probably hates it. Pretty much. Oh, yeah, I pretty much hate it. Yep. I'll see if it's on here. If it's not on here, it is on my... It's not on here. It's on my iPod. No, it's on my iPod, which I do have with me, I think. No, I have the Humbards. Oh, that's the other thing that I wanted to mention is that, Adam wants credit here. I got started on this wacky music kick when we were coming back from a camping trip in like, what, 90? It was Hale Bop. It was a Hale Bop year.
Sedona
Hale Bop year.
Probably, when was that? 90-something, 94? I don't know.
94 or 5?
Yeah, I had, there was this tape. There was a guy, he's still around, Otis F. Otter.
Yeah, he's best known, I think, probably for the 365 Days Project, and also his band, the Brand Flakes.
He has a band, and he also had the Mofo Ministry. It was like this collection of tapes that he was trading. He had all this off-the-wall crazy material, and one tape was called the Mind Control tape, and it had some of our favorite ditties on there, and I played that for Greg. We were coming back from Sedona, I guess. It had, what are some of the songs? The Monkey Song and the Ekankar. I never say that right. Ekankar?
Ekankar?
Ekankar.
Another one of Sigrid's favorite songs.
Yeah, we won't...
Have you seen the Ekin car? Yeah, there's a police car down there.
Yep, there we go again.
Ekin car world headquarters, I think, is up on Sunset, next to Crossroads of the World.
All the kooks are here. But I played you that stuff, and you dug it. Then one of the songs was about Slap a Jap for Uncle Sam.
Going to have to slap the dirty little Jap. I played it for my mom, and she said, I'm going to slap him.
And I felt a little ill at ease when I played that. You know, you're Japanese. I didn't know you that well. I thought, oh, shit, hope I don't offend this.
You can't offend me.
Well, some people are sensitive, you know.
They're idiots.
I
can understand if they had a death in the family or something like that, and you're making fun of cancer, and they've had a cancer in the family, and they can't. I will apologize, but I will not apologize for cancer jokes or laughing at things, because that's... You have to have laughter. You have to have what's the word? It's an escape valve. You know,
my wife. You know, she went through a little bout with. And it was happening. We didn't tell you guys about it, but we didn't really know where we were at with it. But when we went to see Tony Clifton, he had all those crazy cancer jokes, and I was watching her, and she was just dying from laughter. Like,
do you know why? I've had two friends that have gone through cancer and the chemo and everything. Uh-huh. Nobody enjoys a cancer joke more than a cancer patient.
Oh, God, he was hilarious that
I've
night.
Had people around me gasp when I made, like, a sick cancer joke around somebody that everybody knows has it.
Yeah.
And they're laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I checked it out with them before because they, and it's funny, and they told me the same thing. Nobody appreciates it more than somebody that has it.
Tony Clifton was great, though.
Yeah, you're kind of banishing some of the fear just by making jokes about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody's truly offended, yeah, well, then you lay off and say, look, I'm sorry I offended you, but, you know, I don't think there's there's no reason to be really offended by anything except things, you know, making jokes about like murder and rape or something that have actually happened. I suppose that's not quite so funny.
I don't know if Jerry Sandusky jokes are in.
See, they're not. They're funny to everybody except people at the school, Sandusky, and the people that were affected. But that's like any humor, you know. Yeah. If you trip over something, it's not funny. But if somebody's standing next to you, it's very funny. I found the Humbards hiding place.
Out there in Radio Land, prepare yourself for a treat.
For crazy, wacky.
I actually
take a break.
I love stuff like this.
I do too. Although if you wanted to get me to divulge the secrets, just put me in a room and play this like 100 times. the purple polka dot bikini in that Billy Wilder movie. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Love it. Love that shit.
That when we were here on the with the microphones down, Adam said, if you tried, you could not make that up. That's what makes it so incredible. Yeah. And I think, was that on the mind control tape?
No, but that's something that came out of the 365
right.
days thing, I think. It's probably a Otis F. Fodder discovery, I'd imagine.
Yeah. When I was house sitting about a month ago here, I went crazy for about 2 days because they had a very fast connection there. I downloaded like 4 hours of music, I think.
How can you listen to all this stuff? Do you have time?
Well, when I'm driving the car, a lot of the time is when I listen to it. And I haven't listened to all the stuff that I actually loaded. I found a site where some guy said, I'm trying to upload every single, like, flying saucer song ever imagined. And he And I noticed that a lot of the stuff he had there, he got from me.
Yeah.
Because I could hear the same. It's the first time it was like the Fibonacci's one. He has that on there. And I know it's mine because I can hear the same pops in the record.
Oh.
But he also found a whole bunch of other stuff, too, which amazed me.
It's amazing you're still finding stuff, though, like that Merv Griffin. Is that a new discovery?
Yeah, that was in that last slew of stuff that I downloaded. I mean, I've been waiting till I have a kind of a pure music show.
You know what I want to hear?
Just to play.
Another request?
Yeah.
Stinky Poodle.
Wow, I haven't heard that in so long.
You like that one?
My wife doesn't mind Stinky Poodle.
And let me try to
Tangela Tricoli.
Tangela Tricoli, yeah, she was actually a pilot for some major airline. Is that
right? She was, I think, the first American, maybe in the world, pilot certified to fly 747s.
Wow.
In the 70s there.
And yeah, her album has like a portrait of her in the cockpit.
Yeah.
As I recall.
And if you got...
pretty nice looking lady, too, as I recall.
If you pick up the CD, I can't remember the name of the company. It's a guy on the East Coast. He has a band called the Space Negroes, but I can't... Eric Lindgren, I think.
The Space
Negroes. Yeah, that's the name of his band. He got a vinyl pressing of it, cleaned it up, and released it on CD. And on the CD are also clips from her. She had a cable show in L.A. for a while. And there's clips from the cable show. And she actually introduces the Stinky Poodles. Here's the famous Stinky Poodles.
Famous.
And this, I guess it was sometime in the late 70s. And she has them compare different hot dogs from different hot dog stands around L.A. I think Carney's won. The Stinky Poodles like the Carney's hot dog the best.
So there was actual story behind the Stinky Poodle song.
Yeah, she actually had a Stinky Poodle or two. So this is one of my favorite classic songs.
Yeah, I haven't heard this for a while.
I haven't either.
I'm just a stinky poodle, as stinky as can be. So furry and so fluffy, you cannot help but love me. I'm your chasing kitty, the silly mousy cat, and hiding all your dirty socks to make you scream. My favorite food is cooked filet mignon with a side of cheese, and I'll beg and bark and spin and dance if you'll give me some more, please. 'Cause I'm just a stinky poodle, stinky as can be, so furry and so fluffy. Stuck out in the yard. Some people think I'm prissy, but others know the truth. A poodle is the perfect pet, and I'm the living proof. I'm just a stinky poodle, as stinky as can be, so furry and so fluffy.
Stinky Poodle. That is a classic.
Yeah, that's about all I could handle of that, though.
You asked for it, though. You requested
it. If it had gone on much longer.
Well, that's right.
I wonder
she
what
does
our,
know when to quit.
Do you get any feedback from your listening audience? I'd like to hear what people think about.
I do sometimes.
They hate what they just heard.
Just shoot me now, says Carlos.
Ah. Sorry, Carlos.
Another thing, Jimmy Haskell is one of my favorite 50s musicians. It's funny, they got like this normal guitar sounding thing, but then these like space age. Yeah, kind of like a Munster thing, Adam says. Anyway, that's just kind of normal stuff, but it's just interesting to me, the Space Age Bashful had electronic effects.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Haskell was, I guess, he's like kind of in the pantheon of Bachelor Pad type music. This one I liked a lot.
Related to Eddie Haskell?
No, unfortunately not.
You know that... Alice Cooper was going around for a while, claiming he was Eddie Haskell. That he played that role when he was younger.
Because nobody had the internet to look it up, is that why?
Oh, yeah, this is back in the 70s when he was a crazy alcoholic. And he'd read these interviews. You remember, like...
Cream and
Circus stuff. And yeah. Cream magazine. You'd get yeah. all, that's when Lester Bangs, some of the... His articles were hilarious, God. Trying to interview some of these things he did with Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy's all drunk off his ass, so Lester Bang this ends up writing this article where they're yelling and insulting each other. It was basically the gist of a 5,000-word article.
What's this one? I like this quite a bit.
When two lovers up on Mars do the hand jive neath the stars, they will dance and form a ring while they clap their hands and sing.
Chipmunks again.
Guy's voice. Right?
Yeah. On her nose, he'll place a ring, and together they will sing.
Make sure to play music yourself. Right?
The
me.
Martian love call is here to stay.
I think it's a creative use of the chipmunk voice thing.
Yeah, it's more melodic than
the Martian love call
album and the chipmunk stuff, it seems like. Sounds like the Humbards.
Martian love call, a hand jive. Kind of like, whoa, the original Hand Jive song. I can't remember who did that one.
I gave you those magazines, Cool and Strange Music.
Yes.
And one of them is an article about Bagdasarian. What the heck was his...
Ross Bagdasarian,
how he got... you know, his whole story, how he came up with Alvin and the Chipmunks. And
really?
I went through...
He wrote the song, Come On in My House.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. And a few others.
Have you heard that original recording of it?
His recording? No.
It's pretty good. It's a fascinating recording. Go ahead.
He was a Fresno dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Famous Fresnoans.
I went to school with his... nephew, I guess. Richard Bagdasarian. Name dropping here.
A lonely immigrant boy.
One lonely immigrant boy.
On his way home from work one day.
Going from work one day.
That's credited to Ross Bagdasarian.
West number one girlie.
And fell in love with her.
Fall in love with her. Right
with narration
away.
By William Saroyan.
He looked at him.
He looked on her.
The writer?
She looked on him.
He wanted to tell her wonderful things.
But he didn't know just what to say.
He loved her and he wanted to marry her.
He loved her. He wanted for to marry her.
So he told her ordinary things in a wonderful way.
He told her.
Yeah. That's what it says on the credit.
Way.
And only everybody knows is the Rosemary Clooney.
Come on to my high house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, my high house, I'm gonna give you apple, a plum, and they forgot to act. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on.
I like the piano.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you fingers and the dates and the grapes and the cakes. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house.
Of course,
house,
you know this.
House, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to
this
my
is the
house,
original recording
house,
of it when it was written.
Give you everything.
It's real rocking.
Yeah.
And very clean.
Yeah. I would say so, yeah.
Smiled at the immigrant boy as if to say, tell me more. The boy did.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you a Christmas tree. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you a marriage ring and a pomegranate to ask. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you a peach and a pear. I love your hair. Hey, come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you Easter egg. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything. The figs and the dates and the grapes and the cakes. Apple, a plum, and apricot, the two. A peach and a pear, I love your hair. A marriage ring and a pomegranate, too. Come on to my house all of your life. Come on, come on, come on, come on, and be my wife.
Strangely, I don't have the Rosemary Clooney. Whoa, it's playing it again.
Stop. Yeah, in that article it talks about how he came up with that chipmunk stuff. He was just, he had recorders and stuff. He was monkeying around his house, and he speeded up one, and his kids heard that, and they got a big kick out of it. And he goes, oh, okay, maybe I can do something with this.
Did you ever hear, I don't know if I have it, I think I do have it, that Patton Oswalt thing about listening to the chipmunks?
That's hilarious.
And then slowing it down so it sounds like...
Yep, that's funny as hell.
I played that for my sister, and she just about peed herself.
Yeah, it is hilarious. Do you have that?
I think so. Let me look. My Christmas Memory by Patton Oswalt. It's like 2 minutes. This is great.
When I was growing up, my favorite Christmas memory was the Alvin and the Chipmunks album, because we had it on LP. And you know what I'm talking about? The Christmas time is here. Remember that song? The little chipmunks are singing, and then there's that guy, Dave, going, all right now, chipmunks, let's all... My brother and I had that on an LP, so what we would do is we would play that as slow, on the slowest speed possible on the record player. So then it sounded like four normal monotone guys just singing this boring Christmas song, and then this demon from like the ninth level of traitors and murderers just screaming at them. And then it was so different. It was like, Christmas, Christmas, time is here. Time for toys and time for cheer.
Simon Miller.
Okay.
The end of
okay.
I think that's all of that one.
That is definitely.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. And you know what? There's no swearing in that whatsoever. That's the amazing thing. It'd be funny without using any off-color words. Unlike Tony Clifton. Adam here came out to L.A. when Tony Clifton played last year,
yeah,
I believe.
Close personal friend of mine.
That's right. I don't like the picture you took of me with
him. Oh, mine looks horrid too. I got this huge double chin. I know I got a little bit of one. It looks like
you
I got
look insane in the picture too.
I had asked him. What did I say to him? I said, "Mr. Clifton, I'm a big fan. I have all your albums."
Fuck you.
He said, "Oh yeah, all 13 of them or something." Yeah.
If you don't know, Tony Clifton is the alter ego, I guess you would say, of Andy Kaufman. And in the 1970s, he used to screw around with people literally, you know, everywhere as much as he could. And one of his characters was Tony Clifton, who was a sleazy lounge singer. Now his writing partner, Bob Zamuda, who used to don the makeup and be Tony Clifton, is now going out and doing Tony Clifton shows again. Now, I've given it all away, but you'd find out anyway. But
looking or so we think. Who knows?
Who knows? But the point of it is the guy, Zamuda, whoever's doing Tony Clifton or Tony Clifton himself, he's ridiculously funny.
Yeah.
He will tell every offensive joke possible just to see. And people walk out. I've seen him twice. Every time people walk out.
He's the most disgusting joke, and it was hilarious, man. Just had us.
Which one?
About Jane Mansfield.
I don't remember it.
Let's not go there.
Okay, okay.
It was just god-awful bad. But, yeah, this thing with laughing, man, I got going on this Alvin and the Chipmunks thing. There's a video I saw on Facebook or something of these people on a train, and they started, a couple of them started laughing, you know, so somebody was filming it with a little phone or something. And it was contagious, and it just goes on. It's totally spontaneous. It's on the subway somewhere,
yeah,
where the whole half of the car, they're just, they can't stop laughing. You know, it's like an acid. Might have had some of those bouts in your youth.
Yes.
You watch the video, and you end up laughing yourself. It's so contagious.
Yeah. It's funny that that's going on, and there's people just, I could see people, most people there were, they thought it was hilarious, but there's some people that weren't sure if they should be laughing.
Have you seen this?
I haven't seen that video.
One guy, and they've been going at it for like a couple minutes, and the train stops, and this guy gets on.
And he's like, "What the
hell?" Yeah, he just, you could tell, are they laughing at me? And he went to the back of the train. It's like, lighten up, dude. These people are on some good acid or something. No, they're a lot, you know, older ladies and stuff, but they just, once you get that bug, man, you're gone until you can break free.
I was listening to one of my Gene Shepherd shows the other day, one I hadn't heard before, and he said, and this was in 1967, he was saying, "Oh, hey, look, just what came in on the news here. Here's an interesting item. A couple of guys in England painted up a truck that with a logo on it and said they were a film company and they were going to go out and film a commercial. So they went out to some little country town in England, or a smaller city, signed up a bunch of women, like housewives and maybe a little bit younger, and said, we're doing a commercial for beans. So what you all have to do is all hold hands out in this field, and we'll go up on the and start walking around, and we're going to go up on the hill so we can get a nice shot of it from the hill. So what you have to do is all hold hands and start going in a circle and just chant beans, beans. And they went up to the top of the hill and they disappeared over the top of the hill, never came back, and left these women out there walking in a circle chanting beans, beans. Why don't people do that anymore? Well, they do, actually. They do internet stuff like that now.
Yeah. Crazy.
And one of the women was quoted as saying, I don't think it's very funny.
How long did it take them to figure out?
Apparently quite a while, like almost an hour. And it's Britain, too, at least back then. And people thought, well, I guess this is what we're supposed to be doing. And not one of them kind of stops and goes, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, in Japan, it probably would have gone on for 5 hours. Or China, or Germany, or any of those countries, yeah. Especially then in the 1960s, before a couple generations down, where people have a little less of a idea about authority than they did then.
Yeah.
But just to put a mirror up to that, how people, you know, like another those guys you're really big fans of, Coyle and Sharp, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They would kind of do the same. They'd go out on the man on the street interviews, but they ask people these completely absurd questions. And the people are like struggling, trying to answer the question, and they have no idea why the person is asking. But it's like, okay, somebody's asking me. It must be important, or yeah, there wouldn't be a guy here with a microphone asking me the question.
I think one of those guys is still around. I'm not sure if it's Coyle or Sharp.
Yeah,
it's funny. I listened to Bear Radio.
Were they from San Francisco?
Yeah. That's where they did all those gigs. Yeah. And occasionally, and he's still doing the man on the street stuff. It's more commercials, and it's,
yeah,
it has to be. I think it's Sharp, and the guy must be shit in the 70s now, at least.
You know what amazed me, to bring it back to the UFO thing, is that Billy Goodman, of the Billy Goodman Radio Happening, which some people listening may know, he's the guy that broke the Area 51 story. Was he on a station in Alaska or something?
No, he was in, or was he in Las South? Vegas.
Okay, he was in Vegas.
Yeah.
But he had Bob Lazar on and broke that whole thing.
Well,
or was it Lazar at that point?
Knapp did the first stuff on TV.
Right.
Which kind of broke it. It might have been an interview or whatever with Lazar, and Goodman picked up on that.
Oh, okay.
It was funny. I started.
So it was Knapp first then.
I was into AM radio back in the day. I used to listen to Larry King.
Yeah.
That's where he, before.
Early, like late 80s, early 90s at this point?
He was
Larry King, you mean?
Yeah, I started listening to him in the late 70s. And the show he would do would be from like on the East Coast, midnight to 6 in the morning. And they'd.
Where all the weird shows happen.
He'd do interviews for like 3 hours, and there was some great stuff like Buckminster Fuller or Mel Brooks. He and Mel Brooks. And Larry was great back then. Now he's, you know, it's a fossil, but.
Yeah.
And
I interviewed him once, so that was fun.
Right.
Yeah.
And but, anyway, I was into listening to AM radio, so I'd mess around and. I picked up on Billy Goodman.
Right.
It was in the late 80s, and this was a little bit before that whole thing broke, and he had a show he called, first it was The Thing, you know, this is The Thing, and they started getting calls about Elvis was still alive, so he kind of got into some fringe territory. Then when the Area 51 thing broke, he started having Lazar and Bill Cooper,
Gene
and all
Huff, all those people.
And all these people. And then they started getting threats and stuff at the station.
Yeah.
And the hours changed. And eventually he got ran off, and, you know, and there was a lot of paranoia. But I have some of those shows. I think I sent you some of the stuff I got a hold of. So I'd be tuning in and listening to that. And it was at those odd hours from like. some of his later shows, midnight to four. And of course, started listening to it, and I'd stay up half the night.
I wonder how far back that. Well, the reason I brought up Billy Goodman is that he was half of Buchanan and Goodman, who did those drop-in records.
Yeah, now the not
the one I, where they somebody they, I like think a, you, I, a reporter on the street, and instead when somebody wanted to answer the question, yeah. they put a hit record in, like a line from a hit record.
I think you probably learned that from me because I blogged about that.
Yeah, probably was from you.
Because I had heard Billy Goodman talking. He's Dickie Goodman on those radios, and I posted about it, and people started responding to some of that. Said, "No, that's not Billy Goodman bullshit." And I go, "Well, I heard him talk about it on. I don't have the recording, but
he talked about it.
And he played the recording of the Martian coming down. They'd insert different songs and stuff.
Yeah,
Dickie Goodman.
Yeah, they were called drop-ins, and then a lot of other people started doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it became a kind of a legitimate sub genre. Was the drop-in.
The thing about Goodman, Art Bell picked up on that.
Yeah.
And he was in Vegas at that time, and he was more political till he started.
Right, and he had a right-wing radio show.
He's credited Billy Goodman of kind of moving him in that direction.
Really?
Yeah. He actually, Goodman died about a year or so ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, cancer. Because I heard Art talking about it one night, that Billy wasn't doing good, and he'd like to get him on the show and talk, and they never did that, then... It was called the Billy Goodman Happening.
That's kind of stuff.
Here is a news bulletin. Santa Claus has been kidnapped by spacemen from a flying saucer, which landed at the North Pole.
Be on the lookout for Santa Claus, last seen wearing...
Black slacks. Black slacks.
We take you now to the White House for an interview with the President. Mr. President, Mr. President.
Keep a knocking, but you can't come in.
Mr. President, have you a word on the Santa Claus kidnapping? We have just received a report from the FBI. Santa has been taken to a satellite circling the Earth. We take you now to the satellite.
This is John Cameron Cameron, downtown Sputnik. We're here in the Sputnik jail with Santa Claus. Wait, what's that sound? The satellite men are coming this way. I think the king of Sputnik is about to speak.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
Santa, have you anything to say to the satellite men?
Come on and do the jailhouse rock, it'll be fun.
Santa! 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 I know how you can escape. Disguised as Elvis Presley. Uh-oh, looks like we've been spotted. We return you now to Earth.
We're now at the North Pole, where a rocket is being launched to catch the satellite and rescue Santa.
Control tower to rocket. Prepare to blast off.
Oh, let's go!
Will the rocket be successful? Will Santa be rescued? Turn the record over and find out.
Well, we won't turn the record over, but I wanted you to hear what the drop-in thing was. And that's Billy Goodman. I
mean, yeah. He wasn't as astute as, say, an Art... Bell is. He's kind of naive a lot of, about, but that kind of made the show charming that he was getting exposed to all this stuff and getting his
mind. Oh my God, really? Oh my God.
Yeah. And who knows, he might have been playing it up.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Well, he wasn't stupid. I hear stuff like this, and it's like listening to a piece. You can read a book or whatever, but then you like hear this piece of history. I know you probably do this too. I like find these little bit, like the other day on my iPod something came up. It was a news report about the LA air raid. Like from CBS, like, you know, strange, something has been sighted over Los Angeles, anti-aircraft fire, nothing hit it. It was a news report from the time.
You mean
the Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. Yeah. But it's fascinating to me finding these little things. That even in these old the Gene Shepard shows I listened to, one of them was like Apollo 17 is sitting on the launch pad right now, and they've just stopped the countdown, and they're waiting. It's like, this is actually when it was happening. So it's fascinating for me to hear that.
Yeah, he was pretty amazing dude. I mean, he'd tell those... He probably had one of those shows at all crazy hours, and he'd be...
Who?
Gene Shepherd. And
he was on WOR for many years in New York City, and the funny thing was, for many of those years, he led into Long John Nebel's show.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew each other. Yeah. I actually have a recording of Long John Nebel interviewing Gene Shepherd on his show.
Oh, sweet.
So, and they don't really talk about weird stuff, but Nebel was like the, he was the Art Bell of the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah.
And he also was featured in the Control of Candy Jones because he was Candy Jones' husband at the time. the mind control book that some of you may know about, which has been sort of discredited, I think. Not completely, but I've heard that it was based on...
Hard to say. She might have... there's no real proof.
Yeah, she might... The full story is probably not in that book. I mean, it probably has equal, maybe more parts of her being a little bit nuts and maybe some government crap or some even maybe some private crap going on to make her think that.
It's a great read.
Yeah.
It's like
Donald Bain's book, The Control of Candy Jones, if you can find that.
It's like reading the Mothman Prophecy.
Yeah.
You don't know how, but it's
the Mothman Prophecy of mind control, I guess.
Well, Walter Boert took it pretty
That's right.
Seriously, he used it for a source in Operation Mind Control, which was the big blockbuster mind control book that came out in the 70s.
We lose anybody? My God, we're keeping our audience. They must love you.
Wow.
They must love you.
Play some more music.
Try and chase them away. You have any requests?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Who else would you be asking? Of course, you know what I got a hankering for is the Renee what was her name?
Hamadi?
Yeah, Hamadi, the Samazon.
Yeah, somebody I think may have posted her entire album somewhere.
I've
got a couple from her, I think.
I might have the whole album or I have a few songs, and it seemed like that was the best thing.
Yeah, it was actually.
Best,
I think last
best
time you were on, we played this.
Relative term.
Nice stereo.
They forgot sukiyaki and the hot pot of sake. About a hootenanny in Kabuki land, I heard a kooky youth they call a shamisen. It's a kooky youth.
Shamisen.
With a long on the way. It's a kooky youth, a sort of tojo banjo with a low-down twang. And you can roam in pagoda and come home in kimona. But to get the most out of the lotus land, you gotta dig that big flat hunchy ranchy shamisen. It's a kooky youth. Lots of hot teriyaki. And I'd even bet you that the West began when a cowboy heard a coolie play a shamisen. It's a kooky yuka. Oh, with a long gun twang. A kooky yuka sort of tojo banjo with a low down twang. Low down twang.
I would really like to hear the rest of that album. And if I can get Adam to send it to me, maybe we'll play the rest of it, and I'll get rid of a lot more of the audience that way. Ah, Adam is back. You know what I found recently online on Mr. Fab's site was a group, a bluegrass group that plays music inspired by Ekinkar, the Hindu Kush Mountain Boys. Oh, is that on? Here we go.
I commented about that. When
did
you
say it was horrible and you couldn't stand it?
Yeah, I didn't want to hear it anymore. You're not going to play it, are you?
No, I'm not. I won't. I don't want you to leave quite yet.
Some kooky music doesn't. Wasn't that... this seemed kind of lame.
Which?
Bluegrass.
Oh, well, I just liked it because it was so horribly lame.
It wasn't horribly lame enough.
That's true. It's not. It's just... what's the word? It's a curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, did you hear? No, I don't want to play that. The Planet Mars. What's that? Oh, here's the introduction to Robot Monster, which is always good.
You are human. Your people were getting too intelligent. We could not wait until you were strong enough to attack us. We had to attack you first.
I think you're just a big bully, pecking on people smaller than you are.
Now I will kill you.
Wow, I could use that for something.
Yeah, you should.
Now beep, I will beep, kill you.
Beep, beep. Here comes the satellite. Beep, beep. Beep, beep. And now it's out of sight. Beep, beep.
Man.
Beep, beep. Around the earth it goes. Beep, beep. Beep, beep.
And its camera's pointing up your nose. It can see right up your nose. It can read your license plate, so you better not do anything wrong.
Oh, I know what I want to hear.
What?
Beep, beep.
The sun
beep,
is
beep.
A massive incandescent gas.
Oh, okay. Beep, beep. The original beep, one, the original. Tom Glaser and Dottie Evans one. Yes.
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep. It opens
it's,
new
how did you, did you see beep, that's beep, who this was? Beep, it's the same people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For future pioneers.
Okay. That's look probably at what it put it in my head. The style.
Yeah.
It must go at least 5 miles a second or it'll never stay up. Some of them can go around the Earth in only an hour and a half.
Beep, 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 around the earth it goes. Beep, 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 and that's how science grows.
Pretty amazing. That's, and Adam said he wanted to hear the Why Does the Sun Shine? Whoa, that's pretty good. Sailor's Hornpipe on guitars. By the Spotniks, who were a Finnish surf band from the 60s.
Yeah, I think I've heard you play them before.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. Okay, here's Why Does the Sun Shine by Tom Glaser and Dottie Evans from the Space Songs album. There it is.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. Yo-ho, it's hot. The sun is not a place where we could live. But here on Earth there'd be no life without the light it gives. We need its light, we need its heat, we need its energy. Without the sun, without a doubt, there'd be no you and me. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. The sun is hot.
It is so hot that everything on it is a gas. Iron, copper, aluminum, and many others.
The sun is large.
If the sun were hollow, 1 million Earths could fit inside. And yet, the sun is only a middle-sized star.
The sun is far
amazing.
Away.
About 93 million miles away. And that's why it looks so small.
And even when it's out of sight, the sun shines night and day. The sun gives heat, the sun gives light, the sunlight that we see. The sunlight comes from our own sun's atomic energy.
Scientists have found that the sun is a huge atom-smashing machine. The heat and light of the sun come from the nuclear reactions of hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
So, yeah, Tom Glaser and Dottie Evans, but I didn't hear Dottie in there.
Good old Dottie.
There's a, you know the Moonbillies that did that Mechanical Man?
I'm a mechanical man.
Yeah. They also did, I guess this is the flip side of the record. It's called The Fall of the Planet Earth, and you can tell it's the Moonbillies. Listen. Working? Oh.
Got to plug it in?
I thought I... Oh. Yeah, that's it. Should be... Oh, I've got the volume down. Well, how about that? Let's start that over. Fall of the Planet Earth. It's actually kind of a fascinating, depressing piece of tunesmithing.
That's the kind of music I like.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following is a recording received at our London Observatory... from somewhere in outer space.
Presenting the Moonbillies.
It was said so sad, it was tad so bad. The fall of the great planet Earth.
No, they didn't. They didn't do Mechanical Man. They did the song about the woman that falls in love with the computer. Oh, I can't remember the name of it. The Electronic Brain, or the Electronic Brain, as it's called. Listen, oh, listen, and we will explain the sad, sad story of the Electronic Brain. However, this is a depressing Space Brother type song, actually.
Now come all you space creatures and listen to our song. A story of the mighty Earth and what they did so wrong. They hung there in outer space, they were our closest friend. Until they built their atom bomb, then it was their end.
It was sad, so sad, it was bad, so bad. The fall of that great planet Earth.
We watched them in our telescopes, they had such funny ways. They drove around in gas machines on things they call freeways. Their women, they were pretty, their men were brave and true. But they wouldn't trust each other, and now their world is through.
It was sad, so sad, it was bad, so bad. The fall of the great planet Earth.
We tried so hard to warn them, but heed they would not take. We sent our spaceships down to them, but they were called a fake. Oh, how sad their ending, their doom we could not stop. They built their bombs and rockets, and then they blew their top.
It was sad, so sad, it was bad, so bad. The fall of that great planet Earth.
Oh, if there is another world a-listening to this song, please take our advice to you and stop the ways of wrong. Build your world on trust and love and not on fear and hate. And take a lesson from the Earth and do not share their fate.
It was sad, so sad, it was bad, so bad. The fall of the great planet Earth. The fall of the great planet Earth.
Obligatory,
the sad, sad story of Electronic Brain. The greatest invention, the smartest of all. But he just kept a saying as he stood by the wall.
I am the Electronic Brain, with the highest IQ that you can obtain. I can count every star in the heavens above.
but I have no heart. I can't fall in love.
He has no heart. He can't fall in love. A girl in the office.
You've heard this before, right? No?
Saw him in action, and she was enthralled. She said, "I love you," and will till I die. His tubes turned red, and his head with a sigh.
I am the electronic brain with the highest IQ that you can obtain. I can count every star in the heavens above, but I have no heart. I can't fall in love.
He has no heart. He can't fall in love. The brain got so nervous it nearly went mad. Its wires got twisted. His switches went bad. The girl kept the vow in her love for him, and he kept replying as his battery went dim.
I am the electronic brain with the highest IQ that you can obtain. I can count every star in the heavens above, but I have no heart. I can't fall in love.
He has no heart. He can't fall in love. Now all you take warning to what we advise. A woman can ruin the best brain alive. So what chance has man against her sweet way? Like electronic brain, he finally will say.
Again.
I am the electronic brain with the highest IQ that you can obtain. I can count every star in the heavens above, but I have no heart. I can't fall in love.
He has no heart. He can't fall in love.
But I have no heart. I can't fall in love.
He has no heart. He can't fall in love.
I like that one.
I thought you might like that one.
It's well done. They're a good group.
The Moonbillies. That's the only thing I know by them is that 145, which I think is with the electronic brain backed with the story of the late great planet Earth.
That's kooky music. That's also good music.
Yeah.
You don't always get that.
No, no. It's usually just bad stuff. Remember the, I can't believe I found the theme song to the show UFO. Remember that show?
When was that show?
Sometime in the early 70s, maybe, or late 60s.
Was it, what type of show was it?
It was science fiction show. I think it had to do with, what was it?
Factual based?
No. It wasn't like that one where they did the Project Blue Book files. What was the name of that show? Somebody's going to pop up on
Jack, Jack Webb?
Yeah, Jack Webb actually produced that show, the one with the Project Blue Book.
Jack Webb production.
Yeah. Where is it? UFO TV theme. When I said, it's like, that show? Do I remember? And then I remembered this is the actual TV. Oh, you remember it already?
Well, I have heard this before. I don't necessarily remember the show, but I think I've heard you or somebody else play this.
Yeah, there was, I can't remember what the premise of the show was, but I do remember they always run into aliens every week from some other place.
Did you know that Philip K. Dick wrote a episode of, I'm forgetting the name of the show now, with Roy Thinnes?
Invaders.
The Invaders. Philip K. Dick wrote an episode of that.
No, really?
I have the script. They never did anything with it. I used to belong to the Philip K. Dick Society newsletter that Paul Williams put out.
Yeah.
They'd come up with some gems now and then, and one of them, I still have that somewhere.
Wow. This,
and it was cool. It was a Philip K. Dick's take on it.
Yeah. It was Phil Dickian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he'd ever wrote. What did he do? Just write it on spec and send it into them? Did they have any background on it?
I think so. It was. Just
he was trying to get some work.
Oh, I'm sure he had an agent during the period, but it was in the 60s. Yeah. Trying to make something happen.
We got 3 minutes left. Is there anything on your pimp or flog or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, just the book, Happy Trails, The High Weirdness.
All right.
You can get that on. Should be available in oh, a couple weeks, the Kindle edition, then towards the end of the month, the hard copy. Knock on wood, we'll have it ready by then, and hopefully I can have some copies. I take to New Mexico. I'm going to do a thing there for Leslie Gunthar's UFO paranormal group.
Do you remember what day that's going to be?
Yeah, I think it's May 3rd,
okay,
which is a Saturday in the afternoon. And so that's going on. So, yeah, just stay tuned. Check out the book. I think people will dig it.
All right. Yeah, it's if you've followed any of Adam Gorightly in the past, this is kind of a background of where all this stuff came from and where all the thought came from. Anything on any of the kookouts in there?
I never wrote anything about it. I should have, you know.
Or we should.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to have this every year from like 94 or so to maybe 98 or 9.
Oh, we talked about driving back from Sedona was one of the kookouts.
We would get people that were in the zine scene at the time, West Nations, Miles, Lewis, Robert Larson, Peter Stenzel, Paul Rydeen, God, who else showed? Kevin Huddleston came to a few of them.
Reimer.
Dave Reimer, yeah.
Rob Sterling went to
Rob came to one or two of them.
Of conformist fame.
Yeah. We would just get, we just find some place in the Southwest, and we'd all meet up and just hang out for like 2 or 3 days and talk conspiracy and weirdness and UFOs and ghosts and all that around the campfire.
Yeah.
And
good
one
times.
One year we thought, hey, let's do it during the hail bop. And so we did that. We went out to Sedona and it was cloudy for 3 days. The last night we were there, it was clear and we all got to see it.
Yeah, I think it rained on us one
night. It rained on us. I did the old cowboy thing. I took some rocks from around the fire and I put them in the, at the feet of my sleeping bag to keep my feet warm.
It's an old Indian trick.
Yeah. Okay, old Indian trick. I had the UFO. Carlos says I had the UFO TV glow-in-the-dark mothership. It was a British TV show circa 73, 74. So I guess some of them got over. Thanks, Carlos. I guess some of them got over here. Oh, it's 10 o'clock. We got to take off. It's Radio Mysterio. So here's one by Hans Conried and Alice Pierce called Flying Saucer. We'll see you next week. I don't really have a guest yet. Nick Redfern is going to be on in a few weeks here. Nick Redfin with his new book on called, God, it's called Secret Places or Forbidden Places. Basically, it's about secret facilities and all that that people aren't allowed to go into. So we'll be talking to him about that. Flying Saucer by Hans Conried. We'll see you next week on Radio Mysterioso.
See ya.
And thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Wow.
Don't forget to grab it.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't be alarmed by the request I've been asked to make. The management assures you that no one will be harmed. A moment is all my announcement should take. Will the party here who owns the flying saucer, the one that's double parked outside, kindly step forward and own up to it? We've tried to budge it, but we just can't seem to do it. So if the party here who owns the flying saucer will move it, we'll be gratified. Now, folks, you've really got no need to panic. I beg you, please don't get upset. We'd move it ourselves, so we don't fear it, except for that hissing noise whenever we get near it. So if the party here who owns the flying saucer we'll move it, we'll be in his debt. The thing is blocking traffic and arousing outraged cries. Pedestrians approaching it are dropping just like flies. We're not annoyed, and just to prove that everything is cricket, if you'll go out and move your ship, there'll be no parking ticket. So if the party here who owns the flying saucer will send it to the street outside, he'll find his ship has sort of lost control. Good grief, it's swallowing Volkswagen's whole. Oh, if the party here who owns the flying saucer will move it, I can get to mine.